Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the Stuff I Heard podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Peek, and hope everybody's doing well. We are in March Madness. March Madness. That's right. There's all kinds of fun basketball to watch on television. This weekend kicked off the women's conference tournaments. Yeah. So I've been following along. I've talked about it before, but I've been following along with Iowa basketball because of Caitlin Clark. And how impressive it is what she's achieving. So they ended the regular season, and apparently they had their first conference game yesterday and won. In the process, she ended up breaking the record for the most NCAA three-pointers in a season. And there's more games to play. Because they won, they're playing again today at noon Eastern time against Nebraska. So I'll be tuning in to watch that. I think it's going to be on CBS. So, yeah, I'm going to tune in to watch that today. Also, switching gears a little bit, because I live in South Carolina, I have been also following South Carolina sports. And the Gamecocks, led by Dawn Staley, have been on a tear. They have been winning every single game. And I think now Dawn Staley's record is 102 wins. And three losses over three seasons. And they were saying last night that in her three losses, it's by 1 point, 2 points, and 4 points. So, you know, she continually puts out a dynasty team that is just super impressive. And, you know, not enough can be said about the fact that we're watching a legendary coach build her dynasty right now. Just like when I was a kid and Pat Summitt did it in Tennessee, or Coach Krzyzewski did it in Duke. There's times where you see coaches just go on a run of winning and having a style of winning that just is so impressive. And Dawn Staley is doing that right now with the Gamecocks women's basketball team. So last night, I didn't know they were on. We actually had a baby shower to go to. We're expecting our second grandson here in about a month. And so we went to that, and when we got home, I said, oh, I want to check and see if the girls are playing today, what channel they're going to be on or whatever's going on. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's on this channel. So I turned it on. There's 56 seconds left. And I was like, ooh, that 56 seconds lasted like 10 minutes. there was a lot of action on the court. And the Gamecocks barely pulled it out. They were down by two, going back and forth on the court. With 1.1 seconds left in the game, there was an inbound pass to the center, Cordova, she's never scored a three-pointer in college play. She catches the ball, steps over the line for the three-pointer, shoots it off the glass as time expires and wins the game. I mean, I jumped up. I was hooping and hollering. I was unbelievable. What a shot. I mean, you talk about all of the right things come into place in the right time. Tennessee played their hearts out. They had, I noticed their record. They had lost 11 games up to this point, and they were about to take down the number one team in the country to go on for the SEC tournament, which is today. So, impressive run by Tennessee. Today, South Carolina is going to be playing LSU at 3:00 on ESPN. So if you're into that, check it out. This is really exciting to watch history be made by the Lady Gamecocks. So good job, Dawn. Good job, team. It is impressive to watch you guys play. On LSU's game, LSU played after them. They had a player go down with a concussion. It was kind of scary because they had to use the stretcher to get her out of there. They tried to walk with her, and it just wasn't happening. And so they pulled her off. They carted her off with a stretcher, and everybody was worried what was wrong. And I read this morning that she had a concussion and that she's doing much better today. So that's good. But LSU is also on a history's path because last year the Gamecocks didn't make it to the finals. You know, this is for the tournament. This is for the SEC tournament. So they still have the brackets to do for the national championship. But LSU last year proceeded to win the championship over Iowa. And their star player, Angel Reese, is just having a phenomenal year this year. She's averaging a double-double, and she was injured in the game previously. She came into this game late into the first quarter, but still had a dominant showing with a double-double again. So, yeah, going to be an impressive game today. I'm looking forward to watching both of those. So, anyway, moving forward, this is the Stuff I Heard podcast. So you can tell people you heard it here whenever you're flipping around your television stations and you're like, they're like, what are you doing? I'm watching this. Listen, I listen to this podcast. This guy talks about it. I kind of want to watch it. So there you go. I started off the week this past week not really wanting to get into a series. I kind of just wanted to watch some movies, just sort of, you know, bang them out, if you will. But also there are things that I've missed because I've been invested in watching some series. So I kind of wanted to go back and watch some stuff. And you know how on your TV it says, hey, this is about to leave this subscription service that you have. Would you like to watch it before it goes? And somewhere along the way, I don't know, missed a few James Bonds. Now, when I was a kid, James Bond was a big deal because that was really the only movie you could watch where it was like a secret spy kind of situation. And he always had these cool gadgets and he was always way too cool for everybody else that was on the silver screen. And, you know, since then that model has been adapted and morphed and changed. And, you know, now we can watch all kinds of stuff happen like that with kids, you know, movies like Spy Kids and other things of the such. But also now everybody's got cool gadgets. And at a certain point, our real gadgets sort of exceeded what they were doing on the show. It's almost like the creators of the show sort of missed the gun on where technology was going. It reminds me a lot of how Disney really tried to create a Tomorrowland or a Futureland, and they just couldn't keep up because the future was coming so fast and technology was changing so fast. They just couldn't adapt fast enough to show you what it was going to be. So, you know, I've watched several iterations of actors trying to play James Bond. And I don't know, it's been a while, but Daniel Craig has been playing him quite a lot. I lost track of all the James Bonds because there's so much to catch your attention now. There's so many different things. Now, back in the day, we watched all of them in order because it was like, oh, we got to watch this and we got to watch that one. Oh, and then we got to watch this one. I missed this one. Let's go back and watch that one. So, like, we were keeping up with all of them, you know. I remember Pierce Brosnan, Timothy Dalton, Sean Connery, Roger Moore, you know, just knocking out these movies that were at times sort of tongue-in-cheek about their characters and how he was still getting away with things when he shouldn't. And it got to be more fantasy than it was any kind of reality. And then walks in Daniel Craig, who, in my opinion, has been the best James Bond. And I know that's going to be, if anybody out there is a big James Bond fan, they're going to be like, no one is better than Sean Connery or Timothy Dalton, or you just name it, Pierce Brosnan or whatever. To me, Daniel Craig has been the best James Bond because he's the most real. He is a good actor. He's a great actor. But his portrayal of James Bond, to me, is probably his most iconic role that he'll ever have. And I've seen him in some other movies where he's a different guy, and he's a fun guy. You know, if you ever watch Knives Out or Glass Onion, he's got a bit of comedy to him, too. But him as James Bond is just no nonsense, get the job done. Once in a while, wink at the camera or at your situation. But the stories that they've written for him and the situations they've had to put him in to compete with the movies that are around has been super impressive. Not only that, but anytime you can have, let's see, what's his name? Christoph Waltz. Yeah. Anytime you can have Christoph Waltz as your arch nemesis, that I said it before and I'll say it again. Every great movie needs a great bad guy because, or a hero movie. If you're going to have a hero movie, you've got to have a great bad guy. There's got to be an arc of overcoming some obstacle that is unsurmountable. And Christoph Waltz is that guy. I watched this movie. Okay. It's called No Time to Die. Came out in 2021. So right during the middle of the pandemic, this movie comes out, and I didn't go to the theater to see it. Did you? I was impressed with it. I was impressed with all of the characters. The story was great. The acting was amazing. The sets and the setting was just beautiful. This is a great movie. Rami Malek shows up on the screen as one of the bad guys. I wasn't sure of the storyline when it started because I missed whatever was before this. Here's the part that's missing. I tried to find like a chronological list of the Bond movies, and somebody hasn't done their homework because it is hard to find what is supposed to come before this. And I don't know if there was something after this. I've lost track of where these all line up and how to watch them or find out, like, why is he invested in this woman in the beginning? I don't know who she is. I kind of know the girl that he's thinking about who died, apparently. I know that Christoph Waltz is the bad guy because I watched one of the ones. What's the one with Adele singing? Is it Winter Soldier or Winter Solstice or Winter? What the heck is it? I don't know. Whatever. That's the point. Okay. It's not memorable like it used to be. It's not set up like that. This one is. No Time to Die. Fantastic. Interesting. Just action-packed and crazy and just, yeah. Amazing. This is an amazing movie. I'm surprised more people didn't talk about it. I thought they did a fantastic job with this movie. I highly recommend checking it out. If you're a James Bond fan and you're like, I haven't seen anything in a while, you don't have to watch anything before this. Just watch it like I did. And you're going to be blown away just like I was. So just saying, check it out. All right. And then I thought, what else is there out there? So I've been watching the Spider-Man movies, right? Spider-Man, with Tom Holland, and of course the new animated stuff with Miles Morales. And I've talked about Spider-Man a good bit on here and how they're folding Spider-Man into this Marvel universe. And it's sort of a transitionary thing of them going from being owned by Universal to being owned by Marvel or managed by Marvel. I don't know exactly how it's supposed to happen, but so the backstory, okay. And I know this from just talking to friends of mine who are way into comic books way more than I was, especially Spider-Man, because Spider-Man to me was confusing. I had grown up and I had read a few Spider-Man comics, but I was always amazed that there were offshoots of the story. Like there was the Amazing Spider-Man and there was Fantastic Spider-Man. And there was, you know, different Spider-Mans listed for different universes and stuff like that. And I was just like, I don't know. I can't really follow all of this. So with the adaptation of the Miles Morales cartoon stories across the Spider-Verse, in particular, we see him in the multiverse basically interacting outside of time and space with all of the other Spider-Men. And they're adapting the live action shows and people who portrayed them into this as characters. And I felt a responsibility between that and No Way Home with Tom Holland and Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire sharing the screen. I felt like it was time for me to finally watch The Amazing Spider-Man because I had not. Okay. And when this came out with Andrew Garfield, it was after Tobey Maguire had, to me, solidified the role as Spider-Man. And I was like, oh, good. They're reinventing this again. And to me, it was like Batman. They kept reinventing the show with a different actor, doing the same thing with Superman. And I was just like, you guys are just looking for money. This isn't about the story. Like I felt cheated. Okay. I felt like Hollywood was just trying to pull the wool over everybody's eyes and just go, no, this is a whole new thing. And it's just, look, it's Andrew Garfield. Isn't he handsome? That's the point though. Okay. The whole idea of Peter Parker being your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is like Tobey Maguire. He's supposed to be the guy who's not super attractive right off the bat. He's just the little guy who's, you know, working for the paper and kind of into science. And he's actually really good at science, but he's also like secretly your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, right? He was the guy that would show up and save the day, but you're not supposed to know who he is. And he looks unassuming, like Clark Kent was unassuming as Superman. I mean, I don't know, somehow you could put a suit on him and some glasses and you're like, I have no idea who you are, sir. And he pulls off the glasses and he's like, oh, it's Superman. You know what I mean? It's a secret identity. But Andrew Garfield's a handsome fella. He's big and tall and strapping and athletic and all that fun stuff. And he hits the screen and he's supposed to be the guy. And he's charismatic. He's good with everybody. Like he's not Peter Parker that I grew up knowing. Okay. Not to say that he's not Peter Parker. Here's the thing is the Amazing Spider-Man is his own thing. Okay. It exists outside of all of that. You take that character along with the stories of the Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2, which I watched both of them, by the way. It's not that hard. if you just turn it on, I mean, they do a decent job. Okay. You're showing a guy you care about. You got Emma Stone playing Gwen Stacy, which is a good choice, but also she's kind of old to be playing a high school girl. In the first one, she's 24. I looked it up, and in the second one, she's 28. And I was like, okay, kind of, or no, 26 and 28, because they were 2 years apart. So I'm like, okay, kind of a stretch here for her to play a high school kid. I mean, she's a great actress. Don't get me wrong. She's very beautiful. But having her play a high school kid is a little stretch. And also having him play a high school kid is a little stretch. He was a bit old to be playing that part too. But I get it. You want a guy who's athletic and you want to have that superhero-ish kind of person. And it's hard to get that from children as much as you can from adults. But I like his character as it relates to the Spider-Verse, as it relates to the overall story with all of them. Even Tobey Maguire coming back in across the, what is it? Not across the Spider-Verse, Homecoming, with Tom Holland, all of them together creates that whole story. And Spider-Man 4 is getting ready to come out. And I've heard that all of them are going to be in this, including a live action Miles Morales. And I'm so looking forward to that. I'm here for all of it. Listen, I went into this thinking, I'm going to watch this stupid movie and I'm going to hate it. And it was great. 1 and 2 were great. I thought they did a really good job of showing the scientist, Dr. Curtis, whatever, Conrad, making himself into the lizard man in the sewer. And in the second one, having Jamie Foxx become Electro and the other fellow, Harry Osborn, becoming the Green Goblin. I mean, I get it. Good job. Good job. They introduce Mary Jane kind of late, but okay, whatever. I get it. The guy playing Harry Osborn, looks like they really wanted to have Leonardo DiCaprio, but couldn't afford him. So they got this guy who looks like a younger Leonardo with his hair and the way his face is shaped, the way he yells. He has sort of a comic bookish kind of yell. So he's perfect at the Green Goblin. And not to give anything away, but Gwen Stacy dies. And so Andrew Garfield becomes darker and more willing to, let's just say, not save the bad guy. Yeah. But anyway, good story. I liked it. All right. So bouncing out of that, there's a movie that's on Netflix. I was just scrolling along and this came up. It's called Yesterday. Now, if you like the Beatles music, you want to watch Yesterday. Okay. The story is basically this guy, Jack, is a struggling singer-songwriter in England, seaside town, whose dreams of fame are rapidly fading despite the fierce devotion and support of his childhood best friend, Ellie. After a freak bus accident during a global blackout, Jack wakes up to discover that the Beatles have never existed. So he starts performing songs as the greatest band in history to a world that has never heard them, and Jack becomes an overnight sensation with very little help from his agent. His agent at the in the thing is Kate McKinnon. She does a great job as a money-hungry agent. Ed Sheeran's in this. Big surprise. Wasn't expecting her. Lily James plays Ellie. Oh, goodness. Himesh Patel plays Jack Malik. And he, I don't know if that's his real voice singing, but he sounds just like he could be doing Beatles songs the rest of his life, and you wouldn't even know that it wasn't the Beatles. He's impressive. The movie's impressive. Of course, the music is impressive. I heard that on their budget, they actually had to pay $10 million for the rights. Their budget was 26. It says 26 to 41 million, but 10 million of that was just the rights to be able to play Beatles music. And I get it. You live in a day where you can't just make money off of someone else's material that they've written without having some kind of copyright protection so that you get royalties from your thing. But I would hope that on top of all of this, the remaining Beatles would have to look at this and say, I'm so glad that people still enjoy the music we created enough to make a whole movie about us and about what it means. Because it, imagine a world without the Beatles. And that's this world that this guy wakes up to after a bus accident. And he literally just starts playing a song and his friends are like, oh my God, that's the most impressive song ever. He's like, are you kidding me? You don't know what this is? This is the Beatles. They're like, what? What's a Beatle? Like the little bug? And they're like, no. And he goes and he Googles it and it's not there. And he finds out along the way that there's other things that aren't there. It's a cute movie. I like the movie. I like the music. The music was great. To me, this is one that I am sorry that I missed up to this point. It came out in 2019, so the movie's 5 years old. Yesterday was fantastic. Fantastic. I highly recommend checking out Yesterday. It's great. It's listed as a musical comedy. It's fantastic. Go check out Yesterday. Big win. Big hit. All right. I also was looking for something a little sci-fi. So I seen this advertised on Netflix, of course, and it's called Code 8 Part 2. You can pass on this one. Or unless you just want something that's kind of cool on the background while you're doing stuff around the house, this is okay. It stars Robbie Amell, A-M-E-L-L. He plays a guy with superpowers, because that's what we do now. In a city where people with powers are policed and oppressed, an ex-criminal must turn a drug lord he despises, turn to a drug lord he despises to protect a teen from corrupt cop. And the only really big thing about this that I got from it was they do show a version of technology where these mechanical police dogs were used to supposedly bring crime to a halt. But it also shows you how people can use that technology in the wrong way. Now, Robbie Amell, I watch him on another show that's on Amazon called Upload, and I think he's a good actor. I think that this movie could have used a different title. I think the title is what hurts it the most. The characters in it are great. Everybody does their job really well. The acting in it is good. The acting is better than it has to be, honestly. For a superhero movie, and you know, his powers has something to do with electricity, and there's a little girl in it, and she also has the same kind of powers, and it's a good story, but the title just kind of ruins the rest of it, if that makes any sense. Anyway, if you're into science fiction, check it out. Code 8, Part 2. So, whatever. Moving forward. Spaceman. This was advertised on Netflix as being a really cool movie. I watched it. It is really cool. People are going to hate it. Okay. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a 53%. Probably because they were expecting Adam Sandler to be Happy Gilmore or one of his many characters where he's just the loving dad who's kind of silly. This is not that. To me, this is Adam Sandler reaching back to his roots and trying to give a nod to his Jewish roots and to the people of the Czech Republic and to Hanush. And let me explain, okay? Here's the rundown that Google gives. Jakub was raised by his grandparents in the Czech countryside after being abandoned as a young boy. He works as a scientist before trying to become Czech Republic's first astronaut. In this mission, he's supposed to go to Jupiter on a single-person mission that will basically take him away from the Earth for an entire year. He's in a advanced spaceship that is taking him to a purple cloud outside of Jupiter that they can see from Earth, that they don't know what it is. They just want to analyze it. And he is by himself on this space mission to go and collect this purple space dust to analyze. Okay. People don't do well by themselves. They tend to go crazy. That's why solitary confinement exists as a thing. So it is highly encouraged that if any space mission is out there, they want multiple people on board just so that you don't lose your mind, because isolation is not good for the brain. Now, the workaround was supposed to be that he's on this space mission and every day he checks in with mission control and he has a special thing that he can talk to people on the screen and they can talk to him. And so he checks in with students around the world in classrooms, can ask him questions and different people. And he does like broadcasts and stuff like that. And it's great. Okay. Now, along the way, I don't know if he imagines it or if it's actually there, but there's a giant spider who talks to him. And at this point is where most people go, yeah, I'm out. But it's the best part of the movie, okay? The spider doesn't have a name, but the spider knows a lot. The spider's telling him, you're heading towards the beginning and the end. And he's like, this purple dust is basically remnants of the beginning of the universe, but it's also the end of the universe. And so it contains all of that. And the spider explains that I'm from there. And he has to give him a name because he's like, what is your name? He said, I don't have a name. I haven't had anyone around to call me anything in so long that there's no need. Would you like to give me a name? And he's like, I would. He's like, what would you like to call me? And he said, I'd like to name you Hanush. Now, Hanush is spelled H-A-N-U-S, and it's got a little asterisk thing above the S. And because he keeps talking about being from the Czech Republic, I work with a guy and I'm friends with a guy named Jan Vondráška. He's been on the podcast a couple of times. I came to work and I started talking to Jan about this movie and Hanush. And I explained to him that the way they created this character had something to do with, he said, I named you Hanush after the famous person who invented an astronomical clock. And as soon as I mentioned that, Jan's face lit up and he pronounced it differently because H's and J's sort of kind of go back and forth between English and Czech. And he started explaining to me about a clock that was built in Prague. He said, go home and Google it. It's Prague's astronomical clock. And the guy who built it was called Hanush. And he said, it's one of those things that is a, it's one of those things you have to see if you're ever in that area, because it is really amazing. It's an astronomical clock. So I Googled it. I actually typed it in to Google. I said, Hanoush astronomical clock. Right away, the Prague astronomical clock, medieval, built in 1410, the third oldest astronomical clock in the world. It is the oldest clock still in operation. And it's on the old town hall on the old town square. It has three main components: an astronomical dial representing the position of the sun and the moon in the sky, and various astronomical details, statues of Catholic saints on either side of the clock, and quote-unquote the walk of the apostles, an hourly show of moving apostle figures and their sculptures, notably a figure of a skeleton that represents death, striking the time, and a calendar dial with medallions representing the months. According to the local legends, the city will suffer if the clock is neglected and it's in good operation is placed in jeopardy. A ghost mounted on the clock was supposed to nod its head in confirmation. According to the legend, the only hope that was represented by a boy born on New Year's night. Now, reading about this, apparently after they built this clock, or after this guy built this clock, he was blinded by the Prague counselors so that he couldn't repeat his work. So in retaliation, he disabled the clock and no one was able to repair it for another 100 years. In 1552, it was repaired by a clockmaster, where he mentioned Hanoush as the maker of the clock. And yeah, it's been repaired and renovated many times. And if you read about it, the things that it does and has is just remarkable, especially considering the fact that it was built in 1410 originally. Yeah, just impressive. Apparently they have a show now. In 2010, it was the 600th anniversary. So they had a show on the tower, like a light show with projectors and stuff, kind of like you see at Disney. The video shows it being built, torn down, rebuilt, peeled away to show the internal mechanisms and the famous animated figures, as well as various events in clock's history. In 2015, it became a Google Doodle. I remember that. I remember seeing this clock because there's pictures of it on here. And I remember seeing the clock as Google and it animated and did things. It was neat. Yeah, it's been rebuilt and rebuilt and rebuilt and rebuilt. And it's super impressive. There's breakdowns of what each component of what you're seeing, what it is, what it means. It may be considered to be a primitive planetarium because it shows current orientation of the universe relative to the Earth. Four main moving components: a zodiacal ring, an outer rotating ring, an icon representing the sun, and an icon representing the moon. It has 24 hours on the clock. I think I read in here that its 24th hour was considered to be sunset. Yeah, with 24 indicating the time of sunset, which varies. So this thing adjusts automatically due to its astronomical position as well. It varies during the year. So at about, what, 1600? 4 p.m. in the winter. And 8 p.m. in the summer, because they're in higher elevation or higher latitudes or whatever. The sun sets quicker in Prague than it does here in Florence, South Carolina. But the rings move back and forth during the year to coincide with the time of the sunset. The outermost dial is approximately 9.8 feet. The sun also shows its position on the ecliptic. The position of the sun over the curved lines indicates the time in unequal hours due to the position of the sun within its orbit in ellipses. It's amazing. This is amazing. It really is. I scrolled down. It's got images of everything. I highly recommend, if you've got a moment, to look at this online. The calendar plate below the clock was replaced by a copy in 1880. The original by Joseph Manns is restored in the Prague City Museum on the edge of the circle. It's a church calendar with fixed holidays and names of 365 saints. The board displays allegories of months, smaller images representing zodiac signs. Next to the calendar stands a philosopher, Archangel Michael, pointing to the top of the dial, an astronomer, and a chronicler. Those are hard words to say, all in succession. There's also a thing with the apostles on here where it lists the 12 apostles that are on the clock and how two of them were replaced from what we know as some of the... Anyway, you got to check it out. It's super impressive. Prague Astronomical Clock, Prague. Check it out. Super interesting. Okay, so Spaceman, as a movie, I've got to agree it's about a 50-60% movie. Okay. It is a nod to history, and it's sort of a love story to his wife, in the fact that you can get caught up in your mission oftentimes and you forget what's important, which is the people who love you. And sometimes, no matter where you go in life, no matter what you achieve, none of it matters, because at the end of the day, you realize that love is all you need. See, I did it full circle with yesterday. How about that? Huh? Love is all you need. Thank you, John Lennon. You're right. Okay. Last movie. I swear this is it. I watched a lot of movies. I had some free time, okay? I didn't build a table this week. last movie is on Amazon Prime. It's called Ricky Stenicki. Now, here's the rundown of this, okay? This is actually really funny. 20 years after creating an imaginary Ricky Stenicki, three childhood friends use the non-existent pal as their handy alibi for immature behavior. When their spouses and partners get suspicious and demand to finally meet him, the guilty trio decides to hire a wash-up actor, Rod, to bring him to life. However, when Rod takes the role of a lifetime a little too far, they begin to wish they never invented Ricky in the first place. This was directed by Peter Farrelly. So you got to imagine, this is from the mind of the Farrelly brothers, okay? As far as the way they portrayed it. Zac Efron and John Cena are the two names that are on the casting, the front poster or whatever. Zac Efron, you know, is a dad now, and he's trying to get settled down, and he's, you know, he comes across in this as the same kind of guy, even though in this show he doesn't have kids. He is married, but his pals are Andrew Santino and Jermaine Fowler. Andrew Santino is a stand-up comedian who I have enjoyed a ton. He has several podcasts that he's on, but he's doing more and more movies, and he's hilarious. And John Cena plays Rod, who becomes Ricky Stenicki. John Cena, this is his best, listen, this is his best role I've seen him play. He is hilarious in this, and he has sections in this where he has to do dialogue that is so in depth, and I'm so impressed with not only his acting, but his comedic timing. And he's more than willing to be the butt of the joke. He's just like, yeah, I mean, he gets the fact that he's a wrestler and he looks like a pro wrestler still. He's in great shape. He's also an older guy. But he has like this playful mind of, you know, okay, let's play. Let's have fun. Let's improv this. Let's yes and this to death. And he does. And it's hilarious. I know that a lot of people are going to watch it and they're like, this is dumb. I loved it. I thought it was great. So if you love dumb humor, you're going to love this just like I did. I think John Cena is great. So anyway, that's it. Okay. So the big wins of the week for me is, obviously No Time to Die, James Bond. Yesterday, obviously. And Ricky Stenicki. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to stick with that. I'm good with that. You're good with that? Okay. I'm going to wrap this up. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I hope you can use some of these tips as something you can watch. Maybe check out the astronomical clock in Prague. I've heard Jan say that if you're ever in the area, there's a lot of people that go, they just want to see it in person because looking at it online really doesn't do it justice. And I'm sure he's right. So, yeah, that's it. Hope everybody's doing well. Please remember to rate, give me a rating, review, subscribe, thumbs up always helps, and share this with your friends. And as always, cue the cow.
Cue the cow. Moo, baby.